an outdoors writer and photographer, and these days I write a lot about going out with my family. My father's aging, my kids are all grown up, I am aging, and now these trips into wild places, which is what I love more than anything, are really vehicles to explore all these questions about who we are, why we are here, who do we love, why we love them, and what all of that means. I am so very excited to welcome Aaron Teasdale to the Culturally Ours podcast. I have to say that speaking with Aaron for this interview was a complete fangirl moment for me. You see, I've followed Aaron since 2012 when I saw an article he had written about how he took this incredible 6-week bicycle trip on a trail that stretches from Glacier Park, Montana to Banff, Canada with his wife and 2 young kids. I was so inspired by what Aaron had accomplished with his family and the special moments that they shared together. In fact, I credit so much of my love for the outdoors to Aaron's writing and photography. His trip inspired my family to get into the backcountry in Glacier National Park in 2014, and we haven't stopped exploring the backcountry since. It is definitely one of our favorite ways to spend our vacations as a family unit. Aaron is a very accomplished writer and photographer, having won numerous awards and worked with some of the big magazines like Sierra, National Geographic Adventure, Adventure Cyclist, and many more. But as you listen to him speak, you realize that all of that doesn't matter as much as the opportunity to get outdoors and explore, to just be out in nature, as he puts it. When I asked Aaron what were some of his life's most beautiful experiences, his answer really brought a smile to my face. He said childhood and the wonders of being a kid is so special. It is such a fun stage in life and I loved being a kid. Although some people might say that I haven't really outgrown that stage, I think keeping that inner kid alive is important to have a happy life. We should all aspire to do that. We also talked about the changing face of adventure and travel thanks to social media. But travel should always be about having a richer experience and a deeper connection wherever you go. It's not just about checking off places and activities from that proverbial bucket list, right? Aaron was such an absolute delight to speak with, and I know you are going to enjoy getting to know him and be inspired by his story and life journey on this episode of Culturally Ours.
Welcome to Culturally Ours, a show where we explore global cultural diversity in an intimate way through conversations and narratives around lifestyle, culture, food, art, and travel. Host Karthika Gupta talks to people from all over the world who have intimately experienced different cultures as a way to understand each other's worlds from the inside out, focusing on what we have in common.
Welcome, Aaron. Thank you so very much for joining me on Culturally Ours. I cannot tell you how excited I am to have you on the podcast and cannot wait to chat with you and get to know you a little bit better.
Well, thanks for having me. It's fun to be here.
Absolutely. So before we begin, could you tell us a little bit about sort of who you are, where you're from, just to help set the stage for this conversation?
Sure. So I am an outdoor writer and photographer. And it's sometimes hard to know how to categorize myself. Some people call me a travel writer. But really what I do in general is I celebrate the outdoors and the natural world through my work, writing and taking images.
Wow, I love the way you said it, celebrate the outdoors. Now, as a writer, photographer, traveler, you've kind of worked with some of the biggest brands and magazines out there. How did this all come about? Is this something you went to school for or always knew you would get into?
No. And you know, it's a long story. We could do a whole origin story podcast, but for me, I essentially was just a curious, inquisitive human on the planet who wanted to see more and experience more of the places and worlds that I hadn't seen. I'd only heard about or read about or only imagined. And so after college, I started traveling. And I traveled initially just in the American West for a few years. I lived in a Volkswagen van, and I was exploring, and I had a bike, and I had skis, and I had a backpack, and I just wanted to see things. And I started having adventures because I love kind of getting out on the edge and pushing things and just getting deep into places and getting on the edge of things. And so I had one of many misadventures. And afterwards, I said, I'm going to write a story about this. And I sent it in to my favorite magazine, and I sent it in longer than any article has been published in an outdoor magazine ever, because I had no idea what an appropriate length was. I just wrote my story, and I didn't hear from him for 9 months. And I thought, well, that was a fun idea. And then the editor called me. This was Bike Magazine, which at the time was the big mountain bike magazine.
Okay.
And I had this big mountain bike misadventure. We'd gotten lost. And he called me and he said, hey, this is great. And I'm sitting there, you know, fist pumping silently going, oh my gosh, you know, my hero is calling me. and I'm 20, maybe four. And he says, we want to run it, but I need you to make it 800 words. And I said, no problem. How long is it now? And he said, 8,000. And so that was the beginning of my education in this world of writing. And so I turned it in at 1,500 and they ran it. And my career was launched. And then I interned with Bike and Powder, which is a skiing magazine. This is in the late 90s. And I lived in my van in the parking lot of the magazine. And from there, I just started. That was the beginning of my life as a freelance writer. And the photo editor at the magazines took me under his wing and started teaching me photography. And I bought some of his old Nikon manual film equipment and started taking photographs. And that started my journey in photography. And that's been almost as rewarding as writing for me. Now it's, you know, it's something I will always be a photographer. And so then it's just been 20 years now of telling stories and learning the business of being a writer and a photographer, which is, you know, a whole separate conversation. And that business has gone through a lot of changes in the last 5 to 10 right. years. And so I'm still finding a way to make it work. And it's not always easy to do that. But I've gotten better along the way, and, you know, and I'm fortunate now to be able to write for National Geographic and various people. And, it's a hustle. It's a freelance hustle, just like any independent creative person. But really it just grew out of my desire to explore and to share what I was seeing with people.
Oh, I love it. And you're right. It is a hustle like everything else. But when you hustle for something that you're really passionate about, I think it sort of makes the world of difference. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, you know, for me, it's gotten to the point now where, I mean, I'm unemployable at this point. I mean, I don't know what would happen if I tried to shoehorn myself into a standard job with set hours determined by other people. You know, I have to do this. I have to be a writer. I have to explore. I mean, it's not a choice at this point.
Yeah. But you know, what really attracted me to your work and obviously your photography is, like you said, there's a depth, there's a rawness in your own words. And there is something about it that says, if you come with me, this is what you can expect. If you come with me, this is what you will experience. And as a creative, I'm just curious, what is that process like for you? I mean, obviously you see all this, you know, beautiful scenery, landscape experiences. What do you think about when you're like clicking or you're thinking of writing about it? Just walk me through that process.
So, you know, it's an interesting question. And it's one of those things where I'm not even sure. I mean, I'm just out there living and doing, and it's not even so much a strategy that I'm putting together, but really what it's about is when I'm out there, I mean, I know I'm going to be putting a narrative together around this experience that I'm having. And I've pitched that narrative beforehand to a publication that said, this is what I'm doing. This is who I'm going with. This is what the trip's going to be about. And this is the story I want to tell. So I've kind of defined it, but a lot of times when you're out there, that story completely changes. And really the pitch is just a way to get the assignment. I don't feel beholden to what I've told the editor, because at this point, I think the editors know I'm going to give them something interesting. And so I follow the experience, and I'm always thinking, you know, what's going to be interesting here? And I'm starting with what's interesting to me. And so I'll get captivated by some, you know, maybe it's a plant, or maybe it's wildlife, or maybe it's the geographical experience of a beautiful place, or maybe it's the relationships I'm having with the people. I write a lot about going out with my family, and my father is aging, and my kids are growing up, and I'm aging, and these trips into wild places, which are really what I love more than anything, are really vehicles to explore all of these questions about who we are, why we're here, who we love, why we love them, what that all means. And so I do look for narratives beyond just, I went to a pretty place, because that to me is,
right.
I mean, there's something to that if you can inspire people to get out into places, but to me, I'm looking for more depth than that. I'm looking for the universal things that people can relate to. So when I'm out in these places, I'm making notes. I have a voice recorder in my pocket. I have a notebook and a pen in another pocket. And I'm recording my thoughts. If I'm on the move and I don't want to stop to write, I'll record some insight that I had, or some observations, or even snippets of dialogue that I think are funny or interesting or insightful. And I'm always looking for photographs. I mean, you only need so many photographs. If you're on a trip, you can't shoot all the time, because you're going to end up at your computer for a month afterwards just trying to. So you have to do some filtering as you're out there. And, you know, a magazine feature, and even though magazines are kind of, you know, a dying medium, and I still think in terms of a magazine feature. So it's about 3,500 words, and I'm going to need 8 great photos. And they need to be a diversity of photos, some details, some beautiful landscapes, some people. And so you're kind of thinking about that as you're experiencing the thing. But ultimately, what I'm looking for are capturing the moments within the experience that help tell the story of what I'm doing, and hopefully touch on some deeper universal themes. So, I mean, that was kind of a vague answer, but that's essentially how I think about it.
No, it's, I love it, because you are inspiring, or you are rather motivating others to think before that experience, or think during the experience, right? Because people experience things in different ways, but you have to look beyond, oh, it's a pretty landscape, or it's, you know, it's a beautiful building. What else? What else is there to it? How can you make it your own? And I think you kind of get those questions or those thoughts out, at least to me. When I'm reading it, I'm like, oh, okay, so I can translate this to what makes sense for me, rather than just saying, oh, that's pretty, and, you know, flip the page.
Right. I mean, we all love being out in these places because of the natural beauty. And there's something that's really kind of peaceful about that, I think, for all of us. Just there's something about the grandeur and the scale of the world that when we're out in these wild places, we feel humility, we feel reverence. And so those are wonderful things that I think everyone can appreciate. You know, there's more than that that we can dive into. And a lot of people kind of have this conquering mentality in the natural world. I'm going to conquer that mountain or whatever it is. Mm. And I really, really try to help people see a different way of relating to the natural world, one where we're part of a community and the mountains let us climb them. We're not conquering anything. And so that kind of relationship is something that I try to convey, because I'm hoping to, I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about the natural world and how we relate to it and what it means to me. And I hope to convey some of that depth of feeling to readers, so we can all have richer experiences and understand our relationships with nature, which really underpin the whole existence of humanity on this planet.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Now, you've had a long career. You said 20 years. Can you share some experiences or maybe even people that you've met along the way that have really made an impact on your life, your lifestyle, and perhaps more importantly, your mindset?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this last night, and somehow it's not an easy question to answer, but because on one hand, there's so many people, right?
Right.
But it starts with my mom. And my mom was a Zen Buddhist who raised me as a Buddhist, or at least through the framework of Buddhist philosophy. And so her non-materialism, her kindness, her commitment to living a simple life, those things really gave me my kind of foundational worldview. I mean, that's really how I am. And I really got it from my mom. And she also has had a really finely tuned BS detector. She had no tolerance for a lot of the stuff that we see in America and in the world. And so I have that too. And so it's caused me to kind of step outside the mainstream a lot, because I don't have a lot of tolerance for a lot of the things that, you know, whether it's advertisements or television or the media wants us to think is important. So my mom was big. And then, you know, the guy that got me really inspired to get into the writing is a guy named Rob Story, who is an editor of the magazines I loved. He's the guy that called me. That was big for me. You know, there's a lot of writers I love. That's a whole conversation. But beautiful writers that really are so sensitive in the way they capture the beauty of things and people and the world are the ones that really inspire me. There's some people that I've read and I just think, oh, if I could ever write anything that beautiful, I can die happy. And then I would just add that what I would consider my spiritual mentors, besides my mom and the things I experienced as a child, are Thich Nhat Hanh and Ram Dass. And that those are pretty outside the realm of my work in a way. But they have a very expansive, incredibly generous, and to me, deeply insightful worldview that informs my work. And I try to bring some of these concepts into my outdoor writing in a way that hopefully doesn't even come across, you know, hopefully it's not even that obvious to people. It's just kind of inherent in my work, because I'm not trying to tell anyone how to think necessarily. I'm just sharing my own experiences and insight.
Hey there. I hope you are enjoying this episode of Culturally Ours. Did you know there are so many wonderful resources, articles, and blog posts on the website to extend your Culturally Ours experience? We also have a library of free resources, like a travel guide to some of the most culturally diverse places around the world, a global kitchen essentials cheat sheet, and so much more. Head on over to culturallyours.com/free to grab these, and be sure to check back often as we're constantly adding more resources just for you. Now, let's get back to the episode. Now, you as a writer, as an outdoor adventurer, as somebody who documents these things, you obviously travel a fair bit. Is being on the road and being in these kind of off the beaten path places hard? We sometimes see the glamorous aspect, right? We see these beautiful pictures and these pretty things, but talk to me a little bit about maybe the not so glamorous side of doing these kind of adventures.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of those. And, you know, the travel thing is interesting. I mean, I have two kids. I have a family. I'm happily married. And fortunately, my family's, you know, pretty adventurous. I mean, my wife, she's a traveler. She kind of knew what she was signing up for when she decided that maybe I was someone she could settle down with. Settle down, you know, I don't know if that's the right word. But so there's a balance that happens. So, you know, I basically lived on the road for years before having a family. And I did really curtail that. I mean, I did. My son was 3 weeks old, and I left for South America for a month, which is insane in retrospect. Who does that? But at the time, it seemed totally normal to me. In fact, a lot of things that used to seem normal to me now seem insane. I don't know if that's getting old or getting boring or what, but
let's just say that's kind of getting mature.
I think, let's put an age through it. It's a combination. And you know, it's when you travel, you're experiencing so many things, and it's so much stimulation, and it's beautiful and wonderful. And I think I could actually just live on the road in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. But it's hard when you're away from your family. I love my family, and you miss them. And I got home from that trip to South America, and my son was a new person. I mean, at that age, they grow so quickly. And I remember thinking when I first saw him, oh, what have I missed? And so it's always trade-offs. And then, of course, you know, when you're, I have so many people say to me, you have a dream job. I want to do what you do. and that's, I get it. You know, when I'm out doing something really interesting and cool and fun and it's my job, that's pretty amazing. I'm getting paid to do this incredibly cool thing. What they don't see is, you know, the months I spent trying to get that assignment, the pitches, the talks with editors, they don't see the fact that you don't get your expenses paid anymore. You do sometimes, but not so much as you used to. So you're paying money to be there too. And what they really don't see is when you get home and you have a deadline and you have to write this story and you know it's going to be great, but oh man, you got to come up with it all the threads and write it and you want it to be great. And it's 3 weeks and you're sweating blood over your desk. I mean, they don't see that. There's nothing glamorous about that whatsoever. So it's a lot more complicated. I mean, like everything, it's not as simple and glamorous as people think.
Right. Now, for me, what really inspired me to, and we've talked about this, inspired me to get out into the outdoors was one of your pieces that you had written about traveling with your family. So I believe you called it the Teasdale Train, which was a bike or several bikes connected together with your family, with your kids being outdoors. I would love to know how that all came about and, you know, what that process was like, because traveling with kids is hard.
Yes. And, you know, I look back on that, and that was a really important trip for our family. But I look back on that and I think the same thing, like, what? I did that? How did I think that was a reasonable idea? And we absolutely pulled it off. But it was 6 weeks and we had a tandem mountain bike with a trailer bike on the back. And my wife had a cargo trailer and we packed light. I spent months organizing that. So basically I had the one job I've had in the last 20 years, besides being a writer and photographer, is I took a job at an organization here in Missoula, Montana, where I live, called the Adventure Cycling Association. And they're a large nonprofit devoted to traveling by bicycle. And I worked there for 4 years while my wife was in grad school as an editor and a photo editor on the magazine. So I was making the magazine and I was helping, I was kind of chiming in and helping plan this route called the Great Divide Mountain Bike Route, which actually stretches from Banff in Canada and Alberta to the Mexican border. So it's 27 or 100 miles or more. And I knew the area really well from Missoula to Banff. I'd done some trips with my dad up there. We'd done bike trips and I'd written stories and I'd helped figure out this reroute into this really wild area of British Columbia where they moved the route into. And it ended up being too wild. They ended up moving it back out of there because it freaked people out too much. But so I knew the route and I was kind of ready to stop having, that was an office job. I had an office job. It's unbelievable. But I did. And it was cool. It was great people. But I thought, I can't keep doing this. I need, to get out more. And I started thinking about this trip, and I thought, I'd been biking my kids to school on the Teesdale train. And I thought, you know, I think we can do this. And a big part of my motivation, you know, I mean, we all try to be the best parents we can be, and we all do some things well and some things not so well. And one of the things that I thought is, if there's one thing I can do for my kids, it's going to be to get them into nature as much as I can. And I know from my own experience that there's no replacement for that feeling when you've been out for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and you've been totally unplugged, and you're surrounded by wildlife or forest or wild places. And there's something that happens to you then where you're no longer Aaron Teasdale with a job. You become an animal on a planet, and you start to feel that you are a part of this wild place as a community. And there's something so important to me in that experience. And I thought, if I can convey that to my kids, if I can instill this relationship in them, then I will have succeeded as a father. And so I said, we're going to do this trip, and we're hardly going to bring anything. We're just going to have enough to survive. And I know how to winnow this down. We're just going to have basic food, and we're going to go, and we're going to get there. And we did it. And we had to, there was one day, there was 2 days we had to walk. It was too steep. We had to get over a mountain pass, and we came across grizzly bears at close range. And we're sleeping in this little tent at night by rivers and in forests and on mountaintops. And it was one of the best things I've ever done. And it was incredibly difficult. And I still can't believe I pulled it off.
How old were your kids?
So Jonah was 7 and Silas was 11. And so 11's pretty good. You know, 11, they're getting tough.
Right.
7, they're little. And you have to really keep them engaged, and they're not going to pedal half the time.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of stops for berries. It was a lot of stops for fishing. We brought a Frisbee. That was probably my only concession. You know, we read Tolkien in the tent at night. You know, they did great, and they loved it, and it was so wonderful, but it was hard. I mean, I was exhausted at times, just physically done. And we got the last week, it was snowing and hailing and storming at one point. We're just 2 days from Banff, and we're just like, we got to get there. Like, I don't know how, you know, we were hanging on at that point because we were haggard, and I can't feel my hands anymore because it's so cold and it's hailing. And I realized we have to stop. I'm going to crash. But we had to keep moving because we had to keep our body heat up. We didn't have, you know, it was a thin margin in terms of our gear. So we finally resorted to my ultimate safety net, which is, okay, it's cold, it's the middle of the day, but it doesn't matter. We're setting up the tent and we're all getting on our sleeping bags. And that was that was my safety net for surviving extreme conditions. And I knew we'd be okay if we needed to do that. And we did need to do that. And we stayed in the tent for a day and a half because it was just, it was uncyclable weather. And, you know, that was the adventure. And it was great. And those are the things, right? Like, you don't want your adventure to just be a cakewalk, right? Because it's when you go through those harder things where you really have to dig deep in yourself, that you not only develop a confidence or a measure of strength from that, but those are the things we talk about. When we talk about the trip, we talk about the grizzly bears. We talk about the hail. I mean, sure, we talk about the wild strawberries, but it's when you go through those challenging things that you really do forge those deep connections and memories.
Absolutely. And what an incredible experience, even for the kids, like at that age, at their age, 11 is, yes, 11, you realize, but 11 is still, you know, he's still a kid, but it, you know, what an incredible experience to remember, and that too as a family. So yeah, you guys, you inspired us to get out and enjoy the outdoors. So I do really appreciate that. Now, how do you balance all these things in your life? You've had a pretty good career being outdoors, you have a family, you know, you have a wife, you have kids and all those other things. So how do you balance all of this with your own sort of aspirations and your business?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I mentioned this question to my wife last night. I was looking at some of the questions, and she said, you know, that question isn't even relevant to you because there is no delineation in your work and your life. You know, it's not like, I mean, maybe you're going to ask this question in a minute, but it was, what do you do after a hard day? You know, you've had a long, hard day at work, and what do you do to unwind? And she said, you know, that doesn't apply to you because your hard days are your unwinding. You know, what you do, what you love to do. And I guess I should stop talking from my wife's perspective, but it was interesting for me because I thought, oh, you know, sometimes you need to hear someone describe yourself to really understand. I mean, I guess I do struggle a little bit with the balance because I'm still trying to write a book that I've been working on for 4 years, and I'm having a hard time finding the time to get that done. And there are times where I wish maybe I could spend more time with my kids, although now they're getting older and they don't even care anymore. at least, you know, at my younger boy is 16 and my older boy just turned 20, and you know, dad is not as important to them as I used to be. That's for sure. So in some ways it's getting easier, but, you know, I think that, it's hard for me personally to imagine, devoting my life to a career that I didn't love, at least on some levels. I mean, I don't love everything about my work, but, so that sense of, gosh, you know, what can I do to have a good time now that I'm not working? You know, I don't know if that applies because I have a good time working. I think for me, I guess the thing I would say as far as striking a balance is that, because I don't feel like I'm giving a very good answer right now, but there are times where I'm on deadline and that can get kind of ugly. It's like just slide food under the door to, you know, no one talk to me. And in that last 5 days before I finish a story can get pretty intense. And I can get really sedentary. I can feel the blood pooling in my feet and I'm just like, okay, I got to do something. And so for me, I just need to get in the woods. And, you know, I'm fortunate to live in a place, and the woods could be any natural place, but for me, it's the woods. And I'm lucky to live in a place where I have the woods very near my home. And so maybe it's just jumping on a bike for 45 minutes, or maybe it's just walking, or that for me, whatever stresses I have going on in my life, that for me is how I recalibrate and center. I mean, I do try and meditate every morning and that's part of it too. But for me, that walking in the woods or biking in the woods is a meditation, and it does kind of center me and calm me. And as a creative person who relies on his intellect for his work, I can't tell you how much that helps me see things anew. And that thing you're stuck on or that idea, you get out there and you just get your body moving and your blood flowing and the smells and the sounds. I mean, there's your triggering biochemical changes in our brain. And, you know, we're home when we're in the natural world. Yeah. And all of a sudden, bingo, there's the idea that I needed that I was stuck on all day. Or so, you know, that's kind of how it works for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, when you feel like you can't quite pinpoint what it is, or you're looking for something you can't articulate, just getting outside, away from that, you know, computer or that desk or even home, and just being out in fresh air is just so invigorating. And you just, it just clears your mind. You come back and maybe you have the answer, or like you said, you get the answer when you're out and about. But yeah, something about the natural world is just, I think we as humans need it. As much as we want to say we don't, we really need it.
I think our disconnection from the natural world is one of the core challenges we face as a species. And I think the more we can reconnect with our home, the natural world, the more we'll be able to solve a lot of these huge challenges we face. So, you know, that's these kind of things, without getting too heavy into that, that's the kind of stuff that I'm writing about more and more now as I get older. And maybe I'm not, you know, skiing. Well, actually, I still am skiing off mountains and I love doing that. But I don't tell those stories as much anymore. I'm more exploring kind of these questions of what nature means to us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we need more people to ask those questions and to kind of prompt that dialogue, that internal dialogue for the person reading it or experiencing it, because sometimes we hear these things and we say, okay, I might be the only one who's thinking this. Everybody else seems comfortable. Everybody seems happy. Everybody else, you know, seems like they're having a good life. Am I the oddball ball out? But when you hear these kind of readings, you're like, okay, so I'm not crazy. You know, being outdoors or skiing off the mountaintop like how you do is not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Right. Yes, I couldn't agree more.
All right. So now, if you're open to sharing with us, just because I feel like when people hear personal stories, they're able to connect more and kind of relate to it more. What have been some of your life's perhaps beautiful seasons, and on the flip side, some of the harder experiences, and what has that taught you?
I thought about that a bunch too. So let's start with the good, the good seasons.
Okay.
And for me, I feel like I'm not going to give a very good answer here, but I'm going to try, because I feel like I can think back. I mean, childhood, the wonders of being a kid. And I mean, that what a fun stage in life. I just loved being a kid. Mm. Well, a lot of people might say that hasn't changed. That I haven't really outgrown that stage. And I think keeping the kid alive is, you know, I mean, we should all aspire to that. But I still get excited, you know, unduly excited about things and enthusiastic about things. And but you know, college, I went to this little college and made great friendships. And, that was such a fun, exciting time in my 20s when I was just exploring the world as an independent person. I mean, that was exhilarating. And having kids, oh my gosh, what, I had no idea how amazing that would be. And then now I'm 47 and I'm getting older and I get to see what that's like. And getting older isn't necessarily fun. But at the same time, I feel like I'm getting wiser. I hope I'm getting wiser. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever met, you know, an elderly person who just has this, they're just content. And I think, wow, that is so cool. Like, I wasn't necessarily content when I was 25. I was eager. Yeah. And so I feel like I'm lucky. I mean, I'm saying this from a privileged perspective and I'm aware of that. But I feel like every stage in life has had its own beauty and richness. And I've been lucky to have a fairly secure life. And I think, just a quick aside about privilege, you know, cause that's something that we think more about now, which is really good. But rather than feel guilt for that privilege, what we want is we want to try and make it so everyone can have that secure life and everyone can enjoy their lives and feel like they're secure in their life. So, every season is beautiful as far as I've experienced it. You know, life isn't easy. Everyone has hardships and difficulties, and you know, the harder things It's hard being an independent creative person in America. Health insurance was a huge issue for me for a long time. And that's gotten a little better recently, and hopefully it stays that way with, you know, the changes we've seen in the health industry in America. But you know, finances have been a challenge for me, especially earlier in my career, and Living Simply helps, but that's hard. It tests your commitment. You know, you think, can I keep doing this? Can I keep living a creative life and support a family? Six years ago, my mother died tragically, and I never got to say goodbye to my mom. I mean, I did, but she wasn't conscious. And, that was the hardest thing I've experienced in my life. That was the biggest loss I've experienced in my life. And, so I guess that's the answer to your question. But you know, it's like my mom died and she's gone physically. I don't think she's really gone. And I do think that I will see her again in some form. And in dying, I do feel like my mom taught me a lot of really valuable lessons. And so we go through these hard things and we grow from them. And so, you know, there's so much to be gained from the hardships in life. And as long as you have, as long as it's not all hardships.
No, I agree. I've lost both my parents, and I cannot imagine this is the end. I know I'll see them again, and I know that they're there with me every day. So I completely understand. Now, what advice would you give other sort of travel photographers or creatives or just wannabe adventurers like myself on, you know, how we can live a more sustainable life or a life where we can really enjoy the outdoors? I want to say authentically, and I want to say honestly, because there are those who perhaps don't do it.
Right. True. Mm-hmm. Especially with like the explosion of social media. That's definitely impacting how people experience the outdoors. Well, I think let's just start with people that want to get out or that want to have adventures, or maybe they're inspired by something they read or saw. I think the important thing is to do it for you and not do it for how people will perceive you or what you can show people about it. If you're going out to impress people, there's still value in going out because you're out, but you know, I think motivation is really important, to be aware of your motivation and go out and do something really cool and don't tell anybody, you know? I mean, you know, and then you're doing it for you, for what you're going to get out of it. And it's great to share that, but if you're sharing it for clicks, then I feel like you're missing the point and you're going to just blast through it. And it's like a tick list. A lot of people travel that way. Yeah. And I feel like that kind of misses the point, and there's a deeper experience to be had there, but you have to open yourself to it. But really, I think, you know, I think try and get outside every day, no matter who you are, get outside every day, whether it's an urban walk, but try and find the natural areas too. Find the park, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an urban park. There's going to be trees and birds and those experiences are so valuable for us, and for our health, our mental health, our physical health. I mean, these are measurable things now. We're learning more and more about how the natural world is so vital to just being a healthy human. But for creatives, you know, the landscape for creative people has changed so much that it's people ask me, how can I do what you do? And it's hard to know how to answer that anymore. But I think what I would say is find what you're passionate about. And maybe it's not even the outdoors. Maybe it's food. Maybe it's travel. Maybe it's, I don't know, comic books. I mean, there's so many things it could be. And explore that. If you're someone that's thinking about being a writer photographer, you have that creative instinct. You want to create. You want to share. So I would say you're not going to have success unless you're exploring as a creative person the things that you're passionate about, that you're drawn to, because it's not an easy way to make a living and you're not going to get rich. So you better really love what you're doing.
Very true. All right, we're going to do a quick rapid fire round so that we can get to know you a little bit better. Just tell me whatever the first thing that comes to mind. Okay. Don't overthink it, okay? All right, coffee, tea, or something stronger?
Tea.
Okay, favorite flavor of ice cream?
Okay, wait. I'm going to go back to tea for a minute and just say all chais.
Okay, there we go.
And I had chai ice cream the other day and it was okay, but I'm a big fan of huckleberry ice cream. And for anyone that doesn't know what a huckleberry is, it is a deliciously tangy berry that grows in the Pacific Northwest and in the Northern Rockies. And I harvest them whenever I can. This time of year, they're abundant. And there's a few places here in Montana that make huckleberry ice cream. And it is wonderful.
Sounds delicious. All right. A quote that you get inspired by.
Oh, a quote that I get inspired by. I think I was supposed to think about this more before. and I forgot to do that. So I'm going to make one up a little bit and just don't worry about stuff. That's my quote.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yep. Okay. Horror movies, action adventure, drama, or comedy?
I love movies, and I used to think I was going to write screenplays, and maybe I still will someday. I'm really into the intellectual talkers, the movies that are character and dialogue based. So maybe that's drama. I love comedies too, but those maybe are drama, the movies I love. I hate horror movies. I don't like violence.
Okay. Favorite season, spring, summer, fall, or winter?
That's easy. Spring. And you've got the flowers are blooming. The birds are migrating. The rivers are swollen. You can still ski. The grizzly bears are waking up. Spring's the best.
Okay. I have seen a grizzly bear in spring and oh my God, it's at close range and it's scary, but fascinating as well. Very fascinating. Okay. Childhood dream job.
I used to think I wanted to be president.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately, I got over that.
Beach or mountains?
Oh, you know, that's a really hard one, but I have to say mountains because I'm a mountain person, but I love the ocean.
Okay. Tacos or pizza?
Oh, that's really hard too, but I have to go with tacos because I love spicy food. Any equatorial food, the closer you get to the equator, the better the food gets.
Okay. Three must-haves that you take with you on every trip.
Oh, right. I always bring a camera, always. I always bring a notebook and a writing utensil. That's two. And earplugs.
Okay. All right. I'm going to ask this. Perhaps this is easy. Perhaps this is hard. But we'll just go with it. The favorite adventure you've ever had?
Oh, yeah. That's impossible. Favorite adventure I've ever had. Oh, yeah, that's tough because I've had so many adventures that I have just absolutely loved. And I got to go with a family one. You know, I did, I took my kids out of school for a year a few years ago, and we spent a year in Guatemala and Nicaragua.
Okay.
So I'm probably going to go with that, but I'm going to add one other. Sorry.
That's okay.
Because I did a ski trip in Yellowstone National Park. I guess it was a year and a half ago now. And I was alone and I wanted to ski over a mountain range and down the other side. And I decided to try and do it in a day. And I was coming down the other side and I was skiing through this valley. And I said, this is where grizzly bears are going to be. I just knew it. And within 5 minutes, I came around a corner and there was a big grizzly bear with two full-size cubs.
Oh my gosh.
It was like a pack of grizzly bears. And they never saw me. And I hid behind a tree and I got pictures and I had my bear spray. And then I went a little bit farther. I said, I got to go. I got to get to the road before dark. I was hitchhiking back to another place. And there was another grizzly bear. And this was a lone male. and lone males. Ooh. and he didn't see me, but he was between me and a river that I had to ford to get to the highway before dark to hitchhike. And I'm watching him and I'm thinking, oh, how am I going to get around this thing? And he starts going towards the river. And so I said, okay, I got to go around him and I got to get to the river before the grizzly bear. And I got to get across that river. Otherwise I'm going to have to spend the night out here. I didn't have a tent or a sleeping bag and there's grizzly bears everywhere. And so I skied as fast as I could and I ran. I at some point had to take my skis off. There was too many shrubs. And I ran across the river. Didn't even roll up my pants or take my ski boots off with my skis on my shoulder. I got to the other side. I looked across and there was the bear just up the hill. And he never saw me. And I rushed and, oh, that was incredible. And I got back to civilization at like midnight. And it was hard and my feet hurt for days because I just skied like 24 miles. But those experiences with those grizzly bears are something I will never forget. And even though it was a lot of people, you know, I tell them that story and you're crazy. And what that's in, you know, what are you thinking? You're risking your life. Well, I mean, you know, we risk our life every time we get on the highway. And I will never forget that day. That was one of my very favorite life experiences.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'll never forget it. I don't think I'm going to look at a river and Yellowstone in Yellowstone quite the same way. I'm going to remember your story. All right. Now, if you could give advice to, or even life lessons to a younger Aaron, what would those be?
Yeah. So this is, I should have thought of a better quote because now I'm just circling back because my message to my younger self, I mean, I'm often in my head, right? Like a lot of us, you know, I overthink things and I tend to worry more than I need to about things. So am I doing things the right way? Is this the right decision? What should I do? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And when I was young and trying to figure out life, I worried too much. And what I would say to my younger self, it's nothing, you know, like, oh, invest in a 401k or anything like that. It's just don't worry. Just enjoy it. I mean, we're just here temporarily on this planet. We get this life. We have this body. We can use, it's like, what a joy. What a treat. I mean, what an experience just to be alive here on this planet for this time. And don't worry about all that stuff. It's going to work out. Just enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. We do worry a lot. So now, Aaron, what lies ahead for you? Are you sort of fully living your dream or what comes next, if it's okay to share with us?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I'm not a good planner. You know, I'm a good planner for like, okay, I'm going to do this thing for 6 weeks and I'm going to bring my kids and I can do that. When it comes to life planning, my strategy has always been just make sure you're doing something good and interesting at any given time. And if you keep doing that, eventually it's going to work out. But, you know, I am moving into book writing, assuming I ever finish this book. I'm writing a book about spending a year in Central America with my family.
Okay.
But it's hard because I'm not getting paid to write that. I get paid to write articles. So finding time to write the book in between the articles and adventuring outside and being with my family isn't easy. But I do see myself getting more into books. And my kids are not going to need me as much anymore. So I'm going to ramp up the travel because I have really dialed that back while I raise my kids. And I really, really look forward to being able to just say, okay, see you in 3 months.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your adventures and reading that book. So you better get going with that. Thank you so much, Aaron. This has been amazing and an absolute delight. I have followed you for a long time. And so to get to chat with you and hear your story is really special. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Culturally Ours. Check out the show notes at culturallyours.com. If you've enjoyed the show, please be sure to hit subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with your family and friends.